Welcome to this podcast of the Asia-Pacific Working Group, a regional working group of the Canadian Council for International Cooperation. Today we are talking with Khushi Kabir, coordinator of the Bangladeshi NGO Nigera Kori, which means we do it ourselves. Ms. Kabir is a prominent human rights activist, and she has been working with Nigera Kori for 35 years. Ms. Kabir, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, and it's a great pleasure for me to be here.
My first question is about your organization. Can you just tell us a little bit about the objectives and the work of Nigera Kori?
Nigera Kori works in Bangladesh. It's a Bangladeshi organization. It started its work in 1980, and we work in mainly rural Bangladesh, with landless and land poor families, people who would not have enough land or resources to be able to survive on and would basically be selling or using labor as the main source of livelihood. This category forms possibly a large portion of the Bangladesh's population. They would be about 40% of Bangladesh's total population, which is quite a large segment. And we work with women and men both. Nigera Kori differs from most of the other Bangladeshi organizations who are working on the ground, is that we don't think that the problem of poverty and inequalities exist because of lack of resources, but it's how resources are controlled, lack of access to resources, and people's agency. We are a very strongly hierarchical society, very class-based, and the gender segregation and women's position and subordination is quite strong. So in that context, what Nigera Kori tries to do is create autonomous, strong organizations of rural poor women and men to be able to develop the collective capabilities, agency, to be able to access what has been guaranteed to them in the Constitution, the laws, policies that exist, and programs that the government has taken up supposedly for the interests of the poorest. Very often, we find that that does not actually take place and disparity grows. So we feel instead of creating, which other organizations do, is creating alternatives in terms of providing schools and education or health services or what is very popular in countries like Bangladesh, microcredit, and getting them into the loan system. So instead of providing services, what Nigera Kori does is really creating awareness and strong autonomous organizations where they themselves as citizens of the country with equal rights can access whatever they're supposed to get.
So I think you already touched upon this a little bit, but I wanted to ask you, since one of the basic struggles that Nigera Kori has been involved in has been around access to and control over land, as you were saying, can you tell us a bit more about the approach that Nigera Kori takes to improve access to land in Bangladesh?
First, for people who may not know the situation within Bangladesh, Bangladesh is small in terms of geographical size. It's 55,000 square miles of land. But this is land that's extremely fertile. It's a land where, you know, you would have food production throughout the year. The climatic conditions are ideal. We have abundant water because this is a delta. So abundant water supply, so irrigation, water supply, etc. is there. Fisheries. So so the land may be small and we have a population of over 160 million. But we have achieved officially food self-sufficiency, which means the land grows enough to feed a very large population. Now, what is happening is the control over the land, use of the land, and who owns the land. And here is where the inequalities exist. Here is where the problems exist. In most cases, we have traditionally very large landlords and landowners who would own most of the land, and you would then either rent out land in form of either cash or a share of the crop, and which is very popularly known as sharecropping in the region, or they would employ people as agriculture labor for an entire season for cropping the land. Women had a very specific role and were not basically in the field before. They were doing the post-harvest. After the harvest of the crop, the work gets taken over by women. This is what was traditionally the situation. Things have changed now. And before I say how it has changed, I just state that the government has a policy that a land that is owned by the government, which is quite substantial in number, has not been allocated for any purposes, like given to any other government departments or given to somebody else, would be distributed amongst the landless peasants. And the distribution would be in the name of both the man and the woman, and that they would have access over it. Now, that's what the policies are. What is the reality? The reality is the land is illegally controlled and taken over by very powerful elite. The landless peasants do not get access to the land. Most of the land records are tampered with, so you have overwriting, all kinds of tampering of all kinds, which makes it very difficult to state that what is the actual status of the land. Corruption is very rampant, especially where land is concerned. And therefore, over 80%, we have extremely crowded courts because the cases are enormous and there's a huge backlog of cases. And over 80% of all cases in Bangladesh courts are land-related. So land is very crucial. Land is crucial, and a lot of the, as I said, even the conflicts that arise are land-related, resource-related. So in such a situation, in such an, scenario, the poor are really marginalized. They are, they are not even included. They're totally excluded from their interests, even if policies and laws may exist. And when the poor want to access the land, you have the rich and powerful who all have political affiliations and the money to bribe and use corruption to suppress any kind of people trying to raise their issue. What Nijarakuri tries to do is we want to expose all these issues, bring it to the forefront, bring it to the limelight. What we mainly want to do is create strong organizations of the poor. And in a village, when we say 75% of the poor are organized, then they feel strong enough to form a committee which takes on leadership of that village itself, takes on what doesn't work in that village and where there have been anomalies, corruption, and misrule. So land is a very important issue. You may ask that, if it's only 55,000 square miles, how can government own so much land? There's a lot of river erosion and new land coming up. And that new land that comes up is government land. There has been areas where land has been taken up for development purposes and it's been acquired by the government, but then not needed anymore and used. So that is also government land. And there was we still have a land ceiling, but that is not implemented. But in 1951, there was, immediately after the British left, there was a State Acquisition and Tenancy Act put forward, where the old system, feudal system of landlords owning huge tracts of villages or entire villages were taken away and a land ceiling was imposed. And so a lot of land has come into the government books or records as government land. And how this land is to be distributed, what methods is to be distributed by, and how can it reach the poor, and what are the policies and principles through which this will be done, and how does it reach the women, because it is assumed land as a resource is controlled by the men, that it is not something that women would be involved in. Nijarakuri, along with its groups, are trying to bring forward and say very strongly that access to land and control over its resources is as much a woman's issue as it is what is considered general equals men. So it's a woman's issue, and ensuring that women are not left out in the thinking, women are not left out in when the distribution takes place, is part of our entire work too, as it is in trying to bring about questions of how do we ensure that the records are put in correctly, how do we ensure the poor get access to the resources, how do we ensure the legal system is not working against the poor, how do we ensure that the government follows its own policy. I'd also state here the government has recently, because of the neoliberal market-led economic paradigm that exists, a lot of the government land is now being given to the corporate sector. And they're not all multinationals, but they are national corporate sector who have links with international and multinational corporations. And for agro-businesses within the country, you know, for as business within the country as well as for exports. And so large tracts of land, they're actually, what the government is often doing is it's really backtracking on its own policies and giving huge tracts of land to for agribusinesses or corporations, and even to the military for cantonments. And these are what we are trying to raise. One of the major issues we find quite often is that, like in the southwest and in the coastal areas, because there's a huge market for shrimp, in the north, so shrimp aquaculture is growing, which is taking away people's control and use over the land for their own production, for their own food production, for an export business that is not at all nothing to do with looking at the local people. It's taking away the lives and livelihoods of local people, and when people resist, it's met with violence. And what often happens when you have violence over a community, women and raping women or sexually assaulting women is a means of ensuring control and saying that we've taken control over your group. So this is something that is taking place. There have been murders based on the shrimp aquaculture industry, and the shrimp aquaculture industry is such a it's an industry that's totally it's the shrimp culture industry is so unsustainable. The use of extra salinity in the water destroys the productivity of the land. It destroys trees. The use of antibiotics, chemicals, pesticides which are banned, like endosulfan and other banned chemicals, are used in these shrimps. And the feed itself is also problematic. So even the northern consumer, when they're having the shrimps, do not know that it's environmentally, ecologically unsustainable. Not only just unsustainable, it's totally damaging. it's taking away people's lives and livelihoods, so it's creating inequality and absolute extreme poverty for the people, but it's also very destructive to the consumer. Mm. So those are basically the issues that we work with. We try and think that on the land issue, there has to be more and more focus on nationally and everywhere else. So those who think about development, that land has to come into the center point for discussion.
Well, thank you very much for this overview of your work and the land issues in Bangladesh. I had one more question to ask you, actually. I wanted to ask you, how can Canadian actors, whether they are civil society organizations, government officials, academics, or simply concerned citizens, so what can Canadian actors do to support the achievement of Nigeru Akori's objectives in Bangladesh?
I think the first thing, thank you for this question, the first thing that I think I would like Canadian actors to be more open and aware and not look at it in terms of here's Canada, that's developed country, trying to do something for Bangladesh and the people who are poor in Bangladesh, but looking at the causes of what creates these inequalities. There are many organizations in Canada that are working and to try and find out, such as InterParis, who Nigeru Akori partners with very strongly. And there are many others who have done a lot of work on understanding what the paradigms are and what the conflicts are within the existing, your prevalent paradigm of development, which is anti-poor and anti-women and anti-people. So I think it's very important that people who want to support the work of organizations such as us look at that people all over the world are people and are citizens of the globe. They're global citizens, and therefore each one has responsibility to each other, and try and ensure that everyone's rights are equally, respected.
Thank you. Ms. Kabir, on behalf of the Asia-Pacific Working Group, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.